All right, here we go. On a Sunday morning in Las Vegas, I'm Brian Feldman, and this is Out of Line. We are here live in the Fox Sports RCG Home Loans, powered by Luminate Bank Studio, every Sunday morning at 8 on Fox Sports Radio 98.9 FM and 1340 AM, flagship of the Vegas Golden Knights and sister station of Raiders Nation Radio and ESPN Radio Las Vegas. The We also includes social media director Spencer The Wiz Ostrowski.
Nobody beats the wind.
And producer Chris Magnum Chapman, who aside from being a part of several shows here at Lotus Broadcasting, Mags also serves as a locker room reporter for the Vegas Golden Knights Radio Network and does a pretty cool podcast as well. We are also streaming on the LV Sports Network, and you can watch the show on Facebook Live and Twitch. The page is called Out of Line. That's O-U-T-T-A-L-I-N-E. Follow the show on Instagram and X at Out of Line Fox LV. And since we are live, your calls and questions are welcome. The Fox Sports RCG Home Loans, powered by Luminate Bank Studio. Line is 702-876-1340.
Hi, this is Bubby, and it's time for What's on Tap.
What's on Tap, brought to you by title sponsor RCG Home Loans, powered by Luminate Bank. Whether purchasing a new home or refinancing the home you already own, don't let rates scare you. RCG Home Loans, powered by Luminate Bank, is the company to turn to for all of your home financing needs. To get information or to get your questions answered regarding anything mortgage or real estate related, contact the pros at RCG Home Loans, powered by Luminate Bank, today at 702-964-5720.
We're in the playoffs. That was the goal at the beginning of the season. Every team that's left standing is a good hockey team. There's no easy path to winning, so we understand that. Every game's going to be a battle. I think we should be pretty excited. It's a great opportunity for our team.
Jack Eichel getting ready for the postseason, starts tomorrow night, 6:30 at Dallas, the top team in the Western Conference. We'll see what happens. We'll talk about that during nightcap. We'll also hear from Bruce Cassidy in a minute. And once again, the NBA playoffs also taking place this week, as we know. A couple of games yesterday, the play-in games done. First rounds have started. We'll hear from LeBron James and some other things. How about Michael Porter of the Denver Nuggets? Does he have a lot on his shoulders? We'll talk about that maybe during Fact This. And also today, the NBA draft starting on Thursday. Who are the Raiders going to take? A lot of people are I guess expecting them to take a wide receiver in the first round and maybe a quarterback as well. All that and more coming up your way shortly here on Out of Line. That is What's on Tap. If you are looking to buy a home, refinance the home you currently own, or have any mortgage or real estate related questions, contact the pros at RCG Home Loans, powered by Luminate Bank, today at 702-964-5720. Go ahead, Spencer, hit it.
Hockey players, as you know, are warriors. They don't give up. They come to play every game.
It's time for Nightcap, a cup full of the Vegas Golden Knights. From highlights to interviews to special events, the puck starts here.
Dallas, real balanced hockey team. Had a great regular season. Healthy most of the year and continue to be present. Like I said, there's sets of challenges. I think they got great depth. They've added some young players. Stankoven this year, that's done a good job. Added a D at the deadline, Tana, that helps them. So after that, we haven't seen them for a while. I know they're playing the same way, but they're probably playing it better. So we're going to have to be at our best to win.
Bruce Cassidy, coach of the Vegas Golden Knights, talking about the matchup against the Dallas Stars. And, yeah, they're going to have to be at their best to win. But I think I probably speak for every knowledgeable Vegas Golden Knights fans that I'd rather see Dallas than Edmonton. I'd rather see probably Dallas than maybe, I think I'd rather see Vancouver than Dallas, but it's going to be a tough matchup, and I think the Golden Knights might have hit the end of the road for the season against the Stars. They're that good this year. They're playing great hockey, and it's going to be a tough matchup, but the Golden Knights play them as well as anybody, I think. Again, they've had good success. They're familiar with this. They beat him in a playoff round last year. And as a matter of fact, Jack Eichel talked about that, beating them last year and, you know, getting to play against the Dallas Stars again.
It was a tight checking series last year. Obviously, the first two games of the series went to overtime. And, you know, they're a great hockey team. They've had a great regular season. It seems like we always play them tight. So, just like any series, I think it's going to be a battle.
Yeah, Chris, it's going to be a battle. And, I mean, you know, the Dallas Stars, again, I just think because of the offensive firepower of the Edmonton Oilers and how scary they can be, I like this matchup better. But Dallas might be a little bit better between the pipes, which is always a big thing. And they are just playing very cohesive hockey, and they have been all year.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's crazy because they've seen this team 9 times in the last calendar year, but they haven't seen them since December 9th. That was a 6-1 Golden Knights victory. Yep. So they'll play them at least 4 games, which means that they'll have played the Dallas Stars 13 times in about 11-month stretch, which is really unheard of for a team that's not in your division. But, Brian, I think, look, for as far as a matchup goes, I think the Golden Knights are a tough matchup for the Dallas Stars. I can't imagine that they were sitting home watching what was transpiring against Anaheim the other night, saying, oh man, this is what we get for winning the Western Conference. Yeah. Look, I differ from you in that I wanted Edmonton in the first round. I think the Golden Knights, a fully healthy Golden Knights team is far superior to a fully healthy Edmonton Oilers team, especially down the middle and especially on the blue line. And I think it's kind of a wash in net because Stuart Skinner, Logan Thompson, Aiden Hill, Calvin Pickard, I think they're all probably in that same little rung of mid-range goalies. Look, I don't think that this is a great setup for the Golden Knights for the simple reason that if you get by the Dallas Stars, waiting for you are either the Colorado Avalanche or the Winnipeg Jets. I never wanted to go through the Central Division. I thought that was a much tougher road. Because, look, Colorado, I think they finished the season with a whimper, a disappointing end for them. But they're a really good team, and they have a superstar potential MVP candidate in Nathan MacKinnon. Yeah. Mikko Rantanen is still really capable. Gabe Landeskog is a really good player. If he comes back, it doesn't sound like he's going to be back immediately, but at some point he could play for the Dallas Stars or for the Colorado Avalanche in the playoffs. And I mean, look, you can't worry about that right now. We got to worry about
you didn't mention Cale Makar, who in a couple of years could be the best defenseman
in the
National Hockey
League. Won the Conn Smythe Trophy a couple of years ago. Yeah. So he's probably the best defenseman in the NHL. Yep. He could probably end up with 3 or 4 Norris trophies before it's all said and done. And then you've got Winnipeg, who's got the best goalie in the NHL.
Hottest team
Hellebuck.
In the NHL right now.
Yeah, I mean, they have a great coach in Rick Bonus, who seems to always push the right buttons and really push the Golden Knights. Look, it's not an easy road. I don't know. I'm not going to go out on the prediction line here and say the Golden Knights will or won't repeat, but I will say it's going to be much more difficult to get back to a Stanley Cup final than it was last year. It's tough. And the Golden Knights really, they don't have anyone else but themselves to blame for the path that they have to take. It is the way it is. At this point, what happened the regular season doesn't matter. None of it matters. All that matters is what you do tomorrow night against the Dallas Stars and the subsequent 4 games after that or 3 games after that and maybe more against Dallas. That's the only thing that matters right now. Injuries, man games lost, that doesn't matter at this point. What matters is what you do now going forward. And the Golden Knights will not be measured by what they did in the regular season. They will be measured by what they do starting tomorrow night for the next 2 months. That is what will lay true for the Golden Knights as far as, you know, what their, I don't want to say legacy, but what their grade for this season will be. The goal for them, get to the playoffs, goal achieved. I don't think they care what seed they are. I don't think they care who they have to play in the first round. I think for them, what they care about is being able to skate out at center ice once again with that trophy above your head. That's all that matters for this team. That's all that matters for the front office. What they did up to this point, doesn't matter.
Well, the one thing I will say, Chris, is yes, they are responsible for putting themselves in the position where they are the eighth seed in the Western Conference. However, man hours lost is a big thing.
Well, it is.
And you do have to look back on the season. I mean, no question, Mark Stone, again, a long-term injury, just like last year, came back right before the playoffs. Almost deja vu, except a different, this time a lacerated spleen, which is really serious. We saw the hit that caused that, but he was on pace to have his best season. The guy already had 16 goals. He'd clearly have well over 20, if not 30 goals had he been healthy all year. Points totals, he's still amongst the team's leaders, and look at how many games that he missed. That is a huge loss. You lost Eichel. Here at the end of the season, you lose Pietrangelo to a freak illness, not COVID-related. Then you find out he's got appendicitis. He gets his appendix taken out, but he'll be back. And the one thing, Chris, that I agree with you 100% on is no team wants to play the reigning Stanley Cup champions. I mean, this team knows how to play in the postseason. They are as grizzled of a postseason crew as any team in the National Hockey League. They've been in existence now 7 years. Six of those years were in the postseason. Two Stanley Cup finals to their credit. Three or four conference championships to their credit. It is amazing the success this team has had out of the gate, and it's still continuing. So this team, would anybody be absolutely flabbergasted if this team made a run for the Stanley Cup again? I don't think so. I think they're one of those teams that's lingering at the bottom of their conference that made the playoffs that nobody wants to face, and Dallas is worried about this team. And it wouldn't matter who they face, and I agree with you. I don't think they care who they face right now. I think what they care about is tomorrow night, as you said, going forward. You said this, you know, we'll figure out in the next 2 months. I pray we're still talking about the Golden Knights in the next 2 months. We might not be talking about them again in the next 2 weeks. I mean, that is the situation they're in. They are favored to lose this first round series. So we'll see what happens when it's all said and done and it plays out. To me, the biggest questions are, Chris, and something that's got to be addressed now is who suits up for the Golden Knights, including all the way back to the last line of defense. You saw Aiden Hill play in the last game against Anaheim, made some great saves, but let in two saves that AHL goaltenders make on a nightly basis. This cannot continue to happen. His inconsistency this season has been a huge problem. He shows the ability to make the world-class save, and then he lets up something that's even beyond what would be considered a greasy goal, as Bruce Cassidy would say. That can't happen. Logan Thompson has had stretches. Later in the season, had a big stretch, but still has also let in the occasional soft goal. Hey, that happens to all goaltenders, but at this time of the year, usually the teams that make a run for the Stanley Cup, Chris, are teams that their goaltender is playing solid. So many times goaltenders have bailed teams out in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Throughout history, you've seen it happen. Can Aiden Hill recapture what he had last year? Can Logan Thompson play to his absolute best in the postseason? I think they'll both get work. I think tomorrow night you'll see Logan Thompson in goal, is my opinion, and I think that he might ride the wave. If Thompson plays well, you might see him keep riding Thompson until he's got to put in Hill, or until either they get so far ahead or so far behind in the series that he has to make a change. But that's going to be an interesting scenario, how it plays out with both those guys healthy right now, and Jiří Patera down back in Henderson, healthy, waiting in the wings if something were to happen to one of the two of them. But now you've got to look at the lineup. Now that Stone and Pietrangelo are skating, I'm projecting both of them to be in the lineup tomorrow night. It looks that way. Carrier, who missed the last 11 games of the season, skating again. Chandler Stephenson, a slight injury, he's skating again. Chris, it looks like everyone except for Anthony Mantha right now, who's skating in that non-contact jersey, it looks like everyone but him is pretty much ready to play. Who the heck do you scratch if you're Bruce Cassidy? I mean, always a great problem to have when you're scratching your head over who to scratch. But in the same respect, you've got some guys that need to know whether they're playing or not.
Well, I think you'll start with the fourth line, and if William Carrier is good to go, I think Paul Cotter will come out, and it'll be Nick Waugh, Keegan Kolesar, and William Carrier. Look, when those guys are jamming, they are the best fourth line in hockey. It begins with the Golden Knights and their fourth line, the ferocious forecheck that these guys put forward. Look, it's going to begin and end with that line for the Golden Knights. William Carrier is healthy. If he's good to go, he's in. Paul Cotter will come out. I think on the third line, we do not have Anthony Mantha, but I think when he's healthy, he'll be in. So my third line would be William Karlsson, Brett Howden, and Pavel Dorofeev for now. Obviously, things could change, but I think Dorofeyev has proven that he belongs and that he deserves an opportunity, and he belongs. He's proven that he's an NHL player. He proved that he is. Look, did you know this crazy statistic about Pavel Dorofeyev? Obviously, for rookies, Connor Bedard blew the field away in terms of production. But per games played this season, Pavel Dorofeyev was second with goals per game by a rookie. So he's proven that he belongs.
Oh, Chris, I mean, 13 goals, 11 assists in 47 games.
Yeah.
That's 24 points. That is averaging
one every
more,
two games.
More than a point a game.
Not a point a game, a point every
game.
No,
excuse me, a point every other game.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
That is incredible.
For a rookie?
No question he's earned his. But what you're saying right now is if everyone's healthy, we know Anthony Mantha's probably not skating tomorrow night.
He's close.
He's close, but tomorrow night we're talking the opener. So in the opener, the odd man out, I agree. If Carrier's healthy, I agree it's Cotter. The next man, so on that third line, I think it changes a bit if you have Anthony Mantha out. Is usually on the second line.
Yeah.
I believe it would be. So the guy I'm thinking you're scratching is Michael Amadio,
yes.
Is the other scratch.
Yeah, Michael Amadio,
oh,
I think.
Poor
will come
Michael
out.
Amadio again this year.
Yeah.
The odd man out. But,
I think he'll have an opportunity to play.
Tomorrow night, I think he's on the third line.
Well, it depends on whether or not Mark Stone plays.
Oh, that's true.
If Mark Stone is healthy,
that's true. So
right now my third line is Brett Howden on the left wing, William Karlsson at center, Pavel Dorofeyev on the right wing. If Mark Stone's healthy, my second line is Chandler Stephenson on the left wing, Tomáš Hertl at center, and Mark Stone on the right side.
Wow.
I mean, you talk about a loaded second line.
Oh, you're right.
I think, you know, Stephenson and Stone, those two have proven together that they are a formidable duo. And I think when you add Tomáš Hertl into the mix, I mean, the guy, I don't think you maximize Stephen's potential because I think he's a better center than a wing. But I think Tomáš Hertl is a superior center to Chandler Stephenson. So I think that's the play there. And then your top line, I think it's the one that we've seen most of the season where it's going to be Barbashev on the left, Eichel at center, and Marchessault on the right wing.
But almost 100 goals between the three of them.
Yeah. I mean, Barbashev had 19. Eichel had 30. Marchessault 42. I mean, that's, what, 90-something goals?
I said just about 100 goals. It's a lot of points. And, Chris, I like your lineup, and I think you are right. I think Amadio could stretch. Now, let's bring Anthony Mantha into the mix.
I think
everybody's healthy. Who
then
is the
I think Dorofeyev will come out in favor of Anthony Mantha. So your third line would be Brett Howden, William Karlsson, Anthony Mantha.
It's interesting because I would have had earlier on Dorofeyev staying in and Brett Howden be the guy scratched. I think with Howden's experience last year in the Stanley Cup, he's the last month he's been playing much better, seems more motivated. I think he does. It's crazy you bring a guy like Dorofeyev out, though, who is a point magnet. But that's a good problem to have. I agree with most of what you said. The Dorofeyev is going to be very interesting because that's a real hard scratch for Bruce Cassidy.
And Bruce Cassidy really likes him.
He does. And
like
that's
when you listen to Bruce talk about Pavel Dorofeyev, he glows.
He's the future. He talks about him as being the future.
He is going to be a potential all-star. I don't know about an all-star, but he's going to be a guy who's scoring 20, 25 goals for this team.
Oh, first or second liner all day long, and I agree with that. Defensively now, it looks like everyone's back. Petrangelo said he is completely healthy from the appendectomy that he had.
That's crazy.
It is crazy.
At least now we can stop speculating.
I know. It's wild because it's like, okay, it's not COVID. I started to really get worried like it could be some type of serious illness.
I think a lot of us were like, I mean, I had a lot of people asking me, and you know, the team is really good about not letting stuff leak out.
Upper body, that's it. Upper body,
like,
the lower body. That's what we know.
We just heard illness.
Yeah, illness.
And
his case, yeah.
I had a lot of people asking me if it was one of his children again.
Yeah.
And my go-to was, look, I have no idea. I know as much as you do. I don't know. I hope not. You know, but your mind, you really have no place, nothing. When you hear illness and you see that the guy was out couple games and then he comes back and plays two games and then he's out again for illness, I think your initial thought is, well, could it be pneumonia? Could it be like meningitis?
Yeah.
I mean, or worse.
Yeah, Lyme disease or something. You know, I mean, you just don't know.
I remember when Mario Lemieux missed time with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's a little before maybe some of the listeners' time, but that was in the early 90s, and Lemieux was maybe the best player in the game, and he got non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And, you know, your mind starts to wander. Yeah. And my thought, obviously, the whole time was, you know, listen, I don't have a tight relationship with Pietrangelo. I'd say, you know, I talk to him just like any other member of the media. But I like the guy. I like the guy a lot. I enjoy talking to him because he's very thoughtful and intelligent, and he seems like he's a really good human being. And your mind is like, oh, my God, I just hope this guy's – like, I don't even care about hockey. I just hope the guy's okay.
When it gets to that and you start seeing the excessive games missed, and especially, like you said, coming back for two and then being out again,
you
start to speculate in a negative way. There's no way not to. And I agree with everything you said about Pietrangelo. You know, always, you know, definitely a high a hockey IQ as well as a high IQ. The guy's a smart
guy. He's a really smart guy,
And as good of a two-way defenseman as there is in the National Hockey League, he is a dependable guy.
He pulls a heavy load.
Dude, all special teams, almost every game when you see ice time for defensemen,
he's the number one guy.
He's the number one guy leading the team in ice time. I mean, he is so – but you look at that, okay, Pietrangelo is going to be back from what they're saying, Chris. Everyone, it looks like pretty much defensively, they are going to be fully intact. Martinez has been skating. You know, he's fine. You know that the odd man out, obviously, a guy like Ben Hutton, he's another guy that's going to be a healthy scratch every night.
We like Ben Hutton,
we do, but he's going to be the healthy scratch. You know that. But when you get everybody back and healthy, Hanifin, don't worry about him. You saw him sit out the last game. It was simply a healthy scratch, giving the guy a little bit of rest before the postseason. Another guy, multiple goals, you know, double-digit goals this year. This guy is as good of an offensive defenseman as there is, and just an unbelievable pickup. One of my favorite pickups the Golden Knights have had since they've been in existence. I love this guy, and I think he's going to be great. But you add him to that, back to that mix, and you've got seven defensemen now that are all starting caliber. To me, I've said it before. I said it in my promo, Chris, and I'm going to stick with it. To me, the odd man out is Zach Whitecloud, and I'm going to say the reason for it. I think that, you know, you looked at Martinez, and he's been a healthy scratch once or twice, but the bottom line is, yes, Braden McNabb led the league in block shots this year. It's only because of the amount of time Martinez missed. This guy perennially leads the league in block shots. He is so good in front of the net, there is no way they're scratching Alec Martinez if he can suit up. And if you don't scratch him, Chris, there's nobody else but either Nick Hague or Zach Whitecloud that would come into discussion. Nick Hague's physical presence and his size and his intimidation ability alone, to me, gives him the edge over Whitecloud. Whitecloud just has not played that good this year. I've called attention to a couple of bad goals that he personally was responsible for on defense. Giveaways, everything else. You've seen, you know, obviously Shea Theodore play sporadic at times. He's had some terrible giveaways too. There's no way he's missing the lineup. So to me, it's Zach Whitecloud's the odd man out.
Yeah, I think that's the obvious answer here. Look, I think Nick Hague has cemented himself as a guy who is not coming out. But I like, and it didn't seem like it was what they were doing yesterday. So Pietrangelo back, but he was skating with Hanifin. I would not have broken up Hanifin and Hague, because I think Hanifin has continued to be an excellent player playing alongside Nick Hague. But Nick Hague's game has elevated, maybe not to the level of Pietrangelo, but I think you balance out your decor a little bit better if you have Nick Hague skating with Noah Hanifin. Obviously, you're not going to break up McNabb and Theodore. Those two are not coming out. And then the third pair, I would have gone with Martinez and Pietrangelo as my third pair. Those are the two guys who helped you win a Stanley Cup last year. That was the pairing, your number one pairing. But, Brian, the good thing for the Golden Knights is they've got two other guys, Whitecloud and Ben Hutton, who you can put in there. At any time. If a guy's not playing well, if a guy gets a little banged up and you need to give him a night off, you have two guys who would probably be playing for, I'm going to say, 12 of the 16, at least 12 of the 16 teams that are in the playoffs. They would be on the ice every single night for a lot of these teams that are in the playoffs. And the Golden Knights have the luxury of healthy scratching them.
And I agree with that wholeheartedly. And I think that speaks volumes for what we're basically telling you is the depth of this team is playoff caliber depth. And that's what why right now they're getting healthy at the perfect time, and nobody wants to play this team. Dallas could be in trouble with the depth and strength of this Vegas Golden Knights team. And like I said, I don't think they get past the Dallas round. I'm just going to say it flat out. Would I be shocked if they did? Absolutely not. This is, again, as I said earlier, as playoff grizzled of a team as there is in the National Hockey League, right there with the Tampa Bay Lightning, a team that just every year finds their way into the playoffs, and they do well in a team you don't want to play against. We'll see what happens this year again. Goaltending, I'm going to say Logan Thompson gets the nod tomorrow, and I think that Bruce Cassidy rides him. If he does well and they find a way to beat the Stars in game one, watch for him to play game two as well, and he might ride him like he rode Aiden Hill at the latter end of the playoffs last year once he got healthy and started playing well. That's what you do. You ride the hot goaltender. And Logan Thompson, I think, is going to get the shot at being that guy at the very beginning. Real quickly, yesterday, both NBA and NHL, you wanted to be a home team. Very rare that in both leagues' playoffs, every single home team won. You had four games in the NBA, two in the NHL, all home teams won. In the NHL, Islanders, Carolina, I thought that would be a good series. Looking forward to it. Carolina came out on top, and, you know, the play of their goaltender is ridiculous right now. He is so good that that's really, to me, what's making the difference in that series. The Islanders played good hockey. You've got to see Matt Barzal play better than he has. I mean, they're counting on this guy to put the puck in the net. He's one of the most dynamic scorers in the game right now. But Carolina played really well defensively. And again, goaltending is what, to me, the difference in that game. And Toronto, man, I mean, they finally got out of the first round last year of the playoffs. It looks like they're right back there again. The Boston Bruins manhandled them yesterday, 5-1 in that game. And, you know, again, in the postseason, Austin Matthews, you know, you got a perennial 70-goal scorer, and this guy just disappears in the postseason. I don't know what happens. Last year he didn't. He played well in their first round and even in their second round series. But this guy has got to score pretty much every night, at least a goal and maybe have an assist for the Toronto Maple Leafs to advance in the postseason. And for some reason, he just, I know that there's focus on him. And I know you, if you watched yesterday, and I'll tell you one thing, the physicality of that New York Carolina series, if you didn't watch that yesterday, that was so much fun. Those guys were beating the hell out of each other. There's no way they can maintain that type of game throughout a 7-game series. They'll kill each other. Neither team will be able to get into the second round. But Boston and Toronto, the same thing. The Bruins are being physical, and you can see him hitting Austin Matthews at every. He's a big guy, though, but they hit him at every opportunity, and I mean that's all you can do. But both Carolina and Boston looked pretty damn good yesterday. Again, Golden Knights tomorrow, 6:30. Should be exciting. Dallas, I know we're all making our schedules out for that one. Tomorrow night, they always say game one's a good one to steal. I'll tell you what, if the Golden Knights get game one, I think that bodes really well for them the rest of the postseason. But we'll see what happens, man. I like the fact that they are where they're at right now, and you see everybody skating. And I definitely want to see Mantha back and healthy. Hopefully the fact that he's skating with that non-contact jersey means he's okay. They kind of, again, it's an injury. They're not literally letting us know exactly what it is, but I think we'll see him back before the end of the Dallas series. I wouldn't be surprised as early as Wednesday night if we see him back. If not, I'll bet for sure by next Saturday at T-Mobile Arena we'll see him back. All right, moving on, NBA playoffs. I mentioned them briefly. Pretty interesting rounds yesterday. Again, all the home teams won, as you saw. Cleveland and Orlando, I thought that would be a decent series. It's not. Cleveland blew them out 97-83, if you saw that game. The game that was the most interesting to me was probably the Minnesota-Phoenix game. I wanted to see what would happen with Durant, and especially Anthony Edwards. This guy right now, I don't know if guys have been watching, but he is something else, man. He is an elite postseason performer. Had another 33 points, 9 rebounds, 6 assists yesterday. This guy just continues to do it, and what he does in the postseason is among the best of all time. They beat Phoenix, as said, handily. Minnesota is a team that could compete in the Western Conference, but I can't see them getting past Milwaukee. I can't see them getting past Denver, but I could see Minnesota getting as far as playing against the Denver Nuggets. I think they're that good of a team this year, and they're definitely someone to look out for. If you saw in the Knicks Philly series, I know Chris, you watched that game. Man, you know, Philly played well, you know, especially Tyrese Maxey, 33 points, and Joel Embiid. I mean, even going down in the second with another knee injury, the same thing, that same exact knee, the left knee that he hurt like 8 games before the end of the season. It looked like he was going to be done. He comes back, 29 points, 8 boards, 6 assists, a typical Joel Embiid. This team cannot win without him. Unfortunately, Chris, I don't think they can even beat the Knicks with him.
Yeah, well, the Knicks got a big contribution off the bench from McBride, Miles McBride, stepping up and, you know, had a huge game for the Knicks. But it's going to be a good series, I think. I think the Sixers, while the Knicks, I think, will ultimately win the series, I think it's going to be tight because of Joel Embiid. I mean, listen, the guy is a potential MVP candidate. He's one of the best players in the league year in, year out.
When he's healthy.
And look, Tobias Harris for the Sixers, he stunk yesterday. He's got to be a lot better. Look, this is a team where you look at what they've got, and unfortunately for them, I'm blanking on his name, was having a great season for them, and then he suffered a back injury. And this was a team that's dealt with a lot of injuries. But ultimately, the Knicks are a better team. The trade they made with the Raptors, I think, really made the Knicks a contender. It made them a lot better. Jalen Brunson, one of the best up-and-coming players in the NBA. I mean, he was already a star last year. He's just catapulted that this year. They got a big contribution from Josh Hart yesterday, who is a guy who while inconsistent,
oh, at times is unbelievable.
Very inconsistent, but he can be a really good player for the Knicks. So I think that the Knicks are gonna. I think they'll handle the Sixers. I think they'll end up winning the series in 5 or 6. Yeah. But I think there's going to be some tight games. Like yesterday was a great game. It wasn't back and forth, but it was as good of a game as you saw on the first day of the NBA playoffs. I thought some of the others were like. I mean, I think the Phoenix Suns. This is a team that underachieves. They've got a bunch of star players, and they're just not very good. It doesn't seem to mesh well.
They get through the regular season, but this happens to them every year in the postseason.
Yeah, I mean, they made the final that one year, lost to the Bucks, but I think perennially they underachieve. I don't think anyone is anticipating much from the winner of the Magic and the Cavs series. And look, the Lakers. I mean, Anthony Davis had a tremendous game for them.
That's what I was going to say, Chris.
But he can't do it alone. He needs help.
No, Anthony Davis, as you mentioned, he and Stephen A. Smith talked about how the Lakers could make a run, and it was going to be
they're not going to beat the Lakers. I know that.
But what he was saying was they could make a run based on the play of Anthony Davis, how good he plays. Anthony Davis can't play much better than he did yesterday. Yeah. At 32 points, 12 rebounds, 7 assists. I mean, to a degree, he played. He matched toe to toe with the Joker. Jokic had 32 points, 14 rebounds, and 5 assists. He's unbelievable with the dad bod. The guy plays great basketball, as good as there is in the league. But the Lakers played and did pretty much everything that they could in the game. This LeBron after the game, if you've got it, Spencer.
One game, they protected at home court. We have another opportunity on Monday to come back and be better. We know how challenging it's going to be. We know how difficult this opponent is and how great they are. So that's all a part of the game. Start doubting you. I don't get into the doubt mindset. Now,
LeBron James had 27 points, 6 rebounds, and 8 assists.
He also had 7 turnovers.
He did have 7 turnovers in the game. And the Lakers have not beaten the Denver Nuggets since 2022. I believe that's 9 straight losses to them. The Denver Nuggets are 11-1 at home since the start of last postseason. They are going to be a tough out again this year. They could win it all. I think Boston and Denver would make a great matchup this year. I think it'll be a good finals, and I can't see anyone else getting to the final either in those two teams when it comes down to it. But the Lakers gave it everything last night, and they still lost. And unfortunately,
I don't think it gets easier for them.
It doesn't.
And Brian,
if there was a game to steal, I thought it was game one.
The key to this series to me is the depth of Denver.
Yeah.
They're just better. I mean, they're just better than the Lakers. I mean, Michael Porter Jr., I know you're going to talk a little bit about him, but, you know, he's a tremendous player. Yeah. Aaron Gordon is another really good player for the Nuggets. But even like Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, like, yeah, not a superstar, probably a guy who you're like, all right, he's not that good. But you know what? He's good enough for the Nuggets, and they don't rely on him to get the job done. They rely on Jokic and Jamal Murray. And, you know, I often ask myself, how good would Jamal Murray be if he didn't suffer that knee injury a couple years ago? Man. I mean, he was on his way to being one of the top four or five players in the NBA, I think. And if you would have had him at that, and he's getting back, but it's a long road back, and I don't know if he'll ever be the guy he was pre-knee injury, but, man, he's a good player. I think he's the second best player in the series.
I would agree with you. He is everything that you could have ever hoped he would have been as an NBA player, and probably exceeded that. Again, when it's all said and done, Chris, when the smoke clears, I don't see anybody beating the Denver Nuggets in the West, and I don't see anybody beating the Boston Celtics in the East. I barring something miraculous, like
if there was someone who could beat the Nuggets, who is it? Because I don't see it.
I don't. And like I said, Minnesota is an exciting team to watch. Anthony Edwards is as good as anybody in the NBA, especially in the postseason. This guy just puts up points. I don't think they've got enough firepower, and as you mentioned, depth to play with the Denver Nuggets. I just don't see it. And in the Eastern Conference, it's the same thing, Chris. I could see the New York Knicks maybe having a little bit of fun against the Celtics. That would be a really interesting Eastern Conference final. But when it's all said and done, I just think those two teams are on a collision course. I think Boston has the edge over them. But, hey, Denver to repeat as champion. And, again, you're going to count out the Joker, man. Jokic, this guy is just ridiculous. I mean, he is not just a great clutch player. He plays from the beginning of the first quarter to the end of the game and with the same enthusiasm. It's like he doesn't get any more intense as the game goes on. This guy is just really good and extremely consistent.
You know, I'm gonna give you the team that could beat the Nuggets.
I'm listening.
The other team that plays in Los Angeles.
I don't think the Clippers, and especially with Kawhi Leonard again, they're saying he's questionable with the knee injury again. Here we are in the postseason.
That's obviously
the same thing.
If Kawhi Leonard is healthy. Well, I think the big three that they've got, Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, James Harden, and look, and I like Norman Powell as well. If they are healthy, and that's a big if, they are, I think, the one team in the West who I think, obviously, a very tough series with the Dallas Mavericks for them.
They've got and also, Chris, it's between the 6 inches between ears with James Harden, with Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah.
Those are factors that you have to, even George, all three of them off at any time. But
they're capable of putting a run together.
I agree.
It takes a lot, you know, the health and obviously the mental well-being.
Sharing the basketball. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of X factors.
I like Oklahoma City. I just think they're too young. I think they need to have a little bit of a postseason experience under.
Fun team to watch.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, probably the MVP of the league on their team.
Yep.
I would agree. You know, it's going to be fun. I think for the first time in a long time, there's two dominant teams, but there's some really good storylines in the NBA playoffs.
It'll be fun getting to the end of the road. You know, talking about the NBA, and as you mentioned, Michael Porter, yeah, we're going to talk about him. So, Spence, go ahead and hit it.
Facts this. If you don't like the facts, take your ass back to bed. Fact this.
It is a fact. The NBA announced Wednesday that Jonte Porter, a two-way player recently under contract with the Toronto Raptors, has been banned from the NBA for life. This is after a league investigation found that Porter violated league rules by disclosing confidential information to sports bettors, limiting his own participation in one or more games for betting purposes and betting on NBA games. Ah, man, Michael Porter. You want to talk? I'm talking about Jonte, his younger brother, his other younger brother, if you didn't know it. What was it? After missing practice, he missed practice the day before the playoffs to testify on behalf of his other younger brother in a Colorado court. Coben Porter was sentenced to 6 years in prison for a drunken driving crash that killed a woman in Colorado last year. That sentencing came 2 days, again, after his brother Jonte was banned. And Coben pleaded guilty back in February to vehicular homicide and vehicular assault as part of the plea agreement. Porter was speeding at the time of the crash and had a blood alcohol level of 0.19, which is more than twice the legal limit of 0.08. You want to talk about Michael Porter putting everything aside. That is a lot to deal with for a family in 1 week. Both of your younger brothers with heavy, heavy reprimands and repercussions for things they did. This was Michael Porter yesterday after the game.
I mean, I think we're human, so we carry our emotions and the things that go on off of the court onto the court. But, you know, I'm mentally tough. I've been through a lot through, you know, my whole career. So, you know, it was just another one of those things that I had to try to play through.
You know, I mean, you know, something you have to try to play through. This is tragic. It really is. You know, you talk about a guy who's a role player in Jonte Porter, an opportunity to play in the National Basketball Association. You're getting paid in Toronto. I don't know what the league minimum is. I didn't look it up, but it's probably right around $1 million to play in the NBA. And, I mean, I don't know how you could be more stupid than to do what this guy did and think that you're just going to get away with it. That's moronic to begin with. But, Spencer, I'll bring you in and ask you about this. You know, what I don't understand is, you know, that you're a role player. How much action should you even have put on you? But, you know, one of the things that happened, and the bottom line is the league's investigation found that prior to the Raptors' March 20th game, Porter disclosed confidential information about his own health status to somebody that he knew to be an NBA bettor. Another guy with whom Porter associated with and also knew to be an NBA bettor subsequently placed an $80,000 parlay proposition bet on an online sportsbook to win $1.1 million, wagering that Porter would underperform in that game. The league's investigation, they ended up investigating. They didn't pay out the bet. And they talked about other things where he had lost on games. But overall, he was like, I think, like the number one bettor on the site for the month. And what I've got to ask you, Spencer, is, and I know you pay a lot of attention to this, why would you give stats or let people bet on individual things like maybe number of assists for role players? A guy like Jonte Porter should not have anything on the board whatsoever because a guy like him might take advantage of the opportunity to try to do it. Now, he's just an idiot, 80,000. If he put maybe even 5,000 on it, they might have been curious, but $80,000 is just moronic.
I think the reality of the situation is that it's addicting. Like, betting is addicting, and it is actively encouraged. I agree with you that, like, probably these random role players shouldn't have over-unders, but it just keeps going on. Like, ESPN promotes, like, as the game's going on, like, their betting information. And at the end of the day, like, all these lower-end guys are just going to get addicted because they can directly influence the game, and they feel like they can get a little bit off the top. And it's really hard to tell, right? Again, like you said, placing an $80,000 bet on a random player, that's a major red flag because no one feels that strongly about something so random like that. But it's going to keep getting worse. We're going to see more and more players do this. It's the nature of betting. You want to do it more. You want to bet more for it. And the fact that these players can all be reached on Twitter and Instagram, like a lot of these guys' DMs are open. It's just an infinite avenue. It's going to happen forever as long as this partnership exists. Probably you shouldn't be able to bet the game outside of the spread. I know that's like almost like taboo now. Like it's just crazy how mainstream betting is and how much it's encouraged, not only just like on the internet, but like literally live during the games. It's a big problem. It's an epidemic. It's already, it already hit the NFL, those Colts receivers. Yeah. And we're doing it every year. Someone's going to get caught doing it every year. It's way worse than they're making it out to seem. I just think they hit these low hanging fruit. Like have them as the headlines, but I know there's got to be more widespread.
Well, you had Major League Baseball kind of sweep something under the rug. That listen, I've lived in Las Vegas for 25 years. I'm not going to sit here and say emphatically with 100% certainty that Shohei Ohtani was betting on baseball. I have a pretty high degree of confidence to say
I'm going to say he was betting on baseball
because
I will say this, come on, man.
$16 million.
No way.
Missing from his account.
No way.
I just don't buy that this bookie was taking $16 million in bets from a guy who's probably making $200,000 a year.
Yeah, no way.
I just don't believe it.
No way. No, I agree. We talked about Spencer brought up names. I mean, Jameson Williams last year with the Lions. You know,
yeah, missed off, half the season.
How much, if they could have won one more game, two more games, who know what would have happened.
But Spencer hit on something that is shoved. First of all, I had a discussion with a friend of mine yesterday, and if I'm Pete Rose, I'm absolutely losing my mind because of the Ohtani nonsense.
Oh, of course.
But when you also factor in that every single team now in Major League Baseball, every game you're watching them and there's a promotion for, you know, this sports gambling site or that sports gambling site. I mean, they're encouraging it. And yet you've got Pete Rose, who, yes, he did bet on baseball. Maybe if he had a translator, like he said, he'd be in the Hall of Fame today.
He was a scumbag too for throwing his friend under a bus at the time.
Well, there's a lot to not like. But the reality is, they have demonized sports gambling for so long, and then as soon as there was an opportunity for these leagues to capitalize and make money off of it,
they jumped on
they,
it.
They pretended like their stance for 100 years never existed.
Yeah, no, Chris, I agree with everything you said there. And Spencer's point, you know, where you talk about, you know, you betting on players' unders. See, you can't take prop bets out of sports now. They're too big. It started where it was just like a Super Bowl thing.
But you can't be stupid either.
But the point is the prop bets, where you're going to see more of it. I do agree. But prop bets should be on players that have an impact only, that have a major impact.
I don't know where anyone is looking at prop bets on Jonte Porter.
No, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Well, they are. When you're Jonte Porter, you're looking and saying, yeah, wow, check this out. 3 assists under. I'm going to pull myself out of the game after a minute and a half. I'll have 1 assist to show that I'm trying, yeah, and then I'll sit down. Yeah. I mean, that's the problem. But if you put the prominent players, the ones that have an impact, they make too much money to risk everything, risk their reputation, risk the history, risk going into the Hall of Fame for making bets to make a couple of extra $1 million. They won't do it, and that's where you're not going to see it. So again, somehow you have to limit it to, it's got to be, and I don't know how you do it. How do you regulate that to make it so it's only like the top 10 players in the league you can have sports prop betting on, so that they're not going to gamble on themselves, because more than likely they never would. It's an interesting subject. It's going to be going on for a long time. And Spencer, I do agree, we will see more of this until they figure out a way now to further regulate it, because again, it's just gotten completely out of control, and that right there is complete proof of that. Spencer, let's move on to the bones, man. We got the draft coming up Thursday. I know you chomp at the bit every week for this. Next week, we're going to be on location at Abir Hussein's house doing our post-draft show. We're going to be joined by Cisco Ortega, the president of the Las Vegas chapter, the Black Hole. Should be a lot of fun out there. There's going to be some other Raider maniacs probably standing behind us while we do the show. But that will be post-draft. Right now, Spencer, it is pre-draft. And a lot of speculation, as there is every year at this time. That's what happens. We speculate on who they're going to take, what is going to happen. And I'm looking at the draft, of what the Raiders are looking at doing, Spencer. And I'm going to say mine first before you do, so it's not like I garden off you. I got to believe, based on where they're at in the draft with the 13th overall pick, they're going to take Malik Nabers. I think he'll still be available. Played at LSU. We all know this guy, just unbelievable quickness in his routes. He has strong hands. His speed make him a top 10 talent for sure. And as I said to you off the show, before the show started, he reminds me a lot of a former LSU wide receiver named Odell Beckham Jr., pretty damn good, who was selected 12th overall by the Giants about 10 years ago. I have the Raiders trading up in the second, or in the first round, maybe in late second round or early second round, to get Michael Penix Jr. I think most people are looking at, he'd be a quarterback that the Raiders were able to get later in the first round or even in the second round, potentially. I think people have been tuning into this guy. He was healthy all last year, had a great senior season, and the reason he is in the mix. But Vegas could sneak into the top end of the first round also to snag him. And that way his rookie contract would include like a team-friendly fifth-year option. That makes sense to me. But what do you got for me, Spence?
Yeah, the Raiders have a lot of options. I'd be pretty shocked if Malik Nabers was to be taken or to be available at 13. I see him going to the Giants as of current, or the Chargers. I could see the Chargers taking him. But the more I think about it, the more I think the Chargers are going to trade back. The name you're going to hear the most often for the Raiders at 13 is Fashanu. He's an offensive tackle from Penn State. Some people even believe he's better than Joe Alt. Some injury problems is what's going to probably have him slide down there to 13. But from a talent standpoint, I think he is probably offensive tackle number one in this year's draft. Other options, obviously, are at the quarterback position. I wouldn't be mad if the Raiders did take Michael Penix at 13. It's obviously a major position of need. I have him as my QB number three in my rankings for this year's draft. Another name you could hear is Quinyon Mitchell, if the Raiders want to go cornerback. Obviously, right guard, right tackle, and cornerback are outside of quarterback are the Raiders' biggest position of need. I think Terrion Arnold would be a little bit of a stretch at 13 for the Raiders, but if Quinyon Mitchell was still there, this guy would be a top 10 pick in almost every other draft. It's just a very quarterback heavy one. So a lot of guys are going to slide outside there. That's about all I could see the Raiders doing for Fashanu, Michael Penix, or Quinyon Mitchell. If I heard any other name, I would be very, very surprised.
Well, there is some decent offensive linemen in the draft. I think they'll probably be gone. You know, a guy like Joe Alt, you know, from Notre Dame, to me, I consider him the best tackle in the draft, in my opinion. I like who you're talking about, but I think Joe Alt can do everything. He can run block. He can block out the sun. He's a big dude, very strong. I don't think he'll get out of the top 10, though, so I don't think he'll be available for the Raiders. But there are some other ones. You've got another tackle, that kid out of Alabama, J.C. Latham, a solid player.
Latham,
I don't think he'll be there. I think he'll go. He might even go to Chris's team, the Jets. I'm looking at him possibly as the 10th pick as they go to protect Aaron Rodgers this year. And then, you know, you've got some other guys too, Spencer, that I like at that line. That guy, Fuagua,
Fuaga
out of Oregon State, mm-hmm. I think is a really good tackle as well. And he could be there when the Raiders draft. So those are all guys I could see potentially going to the Raiders. And the big talk, as you mentioned, man, it is a quarterback-heavy draft. As a matter of fact, Spencer, I really see, unless somebody makes a trade for something preposterous, I see quarterbacks, and I don't think I'm alone in this, being the first four draft picks. I don't think there's any doubt Caleb Williams will go number one of the Chicago Bears. I think Jaden Daniels of LSU goes number two to the Commanders. I think Drake May out of North Carolina is the third pick, and he's going to go to New England. They've definitely give it up on their quarterback. And J.J. McCarthy, maybe the most beneficiary of the postseason this year, where everyone got to really see him showcase his talents. Believe it or not, I think he is going to be the first pick of the New York Giants with the fourth pick in the draft. I see that, and that to me is my top four. Spencer, what do you like as far as the quarterbacks go? Where do you think they're going to go and when?
Yeah, to be honest with you, there's been a lot of hype around Jaden Daniels going second overall, and I can understand it because of their offensive coordinator, but if you're talking about rankings, Drake May is number two for me. And for most of the offseason, it has been Drake May at number two. So I would put a little bit of like money, I guess. I always talked about sports gambling, and here I am. I'm trying to encourage people to bet. But yeah, I would not be shocked to see Drake May go number two. I could see a little bit of a smokescreen with Jaden Daniels.
Maybe.
And I think the New England Patriots are like kind of a team that I think could sneakily trade back. They're so far away from doing anything. And I know having a quarterback is so tempting, but they're going to, if Jaden Daniels goes to the New England Patriots, I think his career is ruined personally.
Well, he could go. What about a guy like, maybe they're thinking, even though Belichick's not in New England anymore, they remember a former Michigan quarterback that a lot of people consider as the GOAT. Maybe they look at J.J. McCarthy and say, I know that's way early to take him, potentially, but they've talked about him moving up into the top 10. And, what about him to New England at number three?
Yeah, I doubt it. I think there's a very clear... He reminds me of Baker Mayfield. I've said that a lot during the draft process.
Ooh,
and
Michigan
Baker Mayfield's not bad,
right?
But I don't know if I'd want to push all my chips in the middle for Baker Mayfield type of quarterback.
Well, it's a guy that can start for you and maybe make some things happen. What do you think, though? Who do you think the Giants... like you said, maybe New England does trade back, but what about the Giants, who clearly are looking for a quarterback right now? What about him? Do they take a chance on either Jaden Daniels if Drake May does go number two, or J.J. McCarthy?
I highly doubt it. They have Daniel Jones on a lot of money this year. I think that they're not. I think they're looking for a new top flight quarterback. So I doubt it. I think they're going to go Malik Nabers. That's what I put my money on.
I think the Daniel Jones era is coming to an end. That's just my opinion. Listen, we're out of time. This is Out of Line. Tune in next week. Again, we will be at a Beer Newsom's house doing the post-draft show, joined by Cisco Ortega, the president of the Las Vegas chapter of the Black Hole. I'm Brian Feldman. Want to thank Spencer, the Wiz Ostrowski, and Chris Magnum Chapman for doing their thing and helping us out today. Again, Vegas Golden Knights start their run to repeat tomorrow, 6:30 p.m. They're in Dallas, and we'll get to see it all over Las Vegas. Plan your time. And again, back next week, and we'll talk all about the NFL draft. That's it for this week. Back next week here on Fox Sports Radio, 8 o'clock, Out of Line, every week, same time, same place. For now, see ya. Bye-bye.